Ronnie, how are you?
Good, Jason. How are you?
Good. But they never skate. Because I know a lot of guys used to smoke darts all the time back in the day when they played. Did you ever smoke?
I can't tell that story.
So you're one of the guys who used to smoke like in intermissions? I love it.
Not in intermissions. Okay. Flats was kind of against that stuff.
Well, okay, so it wasn't intermission then.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good. But it's funny how it changes, right? But for a long time, a lot of guys smoked and played, like Mary Lemieux, Guy Lafleur, a lot of great players used to smoke.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Guy Lafleur was a couple packs a day if you listen to all the folklore. So, I don't know. I know one thing. I stopped in when my daughter was born and haven't had any since, and pretty glad, and tell everybody else out there not to start.
No, it's very true. It can be a tough one to get over. Now, you, of course, are a part of a Hockey for Homeless, a great weekend that you guys do. It's even bigger this year than last year, just based on the response you guys had. You surprised how quickly it's grown after last year?
Actually, it's really exciting for us. I mean, we were looking at last year having 8 teams, and we've got 12 men's this year. We still have the 4 ladies teams, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And, we're actually real happy about the way things have gone.
What was the response? Well, because I thought it was a great initiative for you guys to have women's team, because there's a lot of women playing now, and there's a lot of them that want to get involved in charitable things, and I find a lot of them are geared towards guys too often. How's the response been from the females for you?
Actually, it hasn't been too bad. Like, we have a couple of really, really, really good I guess we call them alumnus because they are part of our alumni group. Shannon Sabados is with us this year, and Karen Ouellette's back. Both are gold medalists and both great hockey players in their own right. And it's a heck of an opportunity for the women to get out and play with some really high-end talent.
Now, Ron, the weekend, I know there's some TSN 1260 listeners that are playing on the TSN team with Struds and Jameson and a few of those other guys. I think Nilsson's on the team again. They'll have a lot of fun. And really, it's just it's to relax and sit down and share some stories. And I know you're a really good storyteller, so there's a few I want to ask you about. Number one, as a coach, the most memorable moment, I'm guessing, for you had to be that series against Dallas, which really kind of reinvigorated Edmonton because of coming off of 5 years of really tough hockey. Can go back to how much you thought that meant just to the city and the organization, even though it was only one round, not the Stanley Cup, but just, how electric that city was for one victory in the first round.
Well, I think it was huge. You know, not only that, I think it was huge for our team. I don't think we really belonged in that series at the start of it. I don't think any of us thought we were going to pull off any miracles, and yet basically it happened because of great goaltending. Curtis was a huge factor in that, but also dedication from a lot of hockey players. I mean, we were likely not as good defensively as they were, but we did score some goals, and that was, to me, was a big thing. We didn't know if we were going to be able to or not. And invigorate the city, my God, it went crazy. I remember people trying to get back into the building after they'd all left. We were down 4-1 or 3-1 to Dallas, and I think it was in game 5 and or 4. People were leaving the building, and half of them were gone. And then we scored 3 in a row and won in overtime, and the building was back packed again, and people were turned around on the Capilano trying to get back. It was crazy.
Well, that game when it was down, it didn't look good, right? You're down 3-0, and I can't remember if Waite scored first or scored second, but I just remember his reaction when he scored. It was like, oh yeah, whatever. It's 3-1. Let's, we got a long ways to go. But it slowly, as a coach in that situation, Ron, you always talk about, okay, guys, just get one. Did you believe that when you got one, that legitimately you guys were going to get some more?
Well, it's kind of a funny story because we scored our second goal. And there was about, I don't know, maybe a minute and 25 seconds left, I think it was, and there was the faceoff was down in Dallas's end, and Bobby McCammon, I remember him on the bench, said, do you think we should take our time out now? And I said, no, Bob, we're going to score right now. And Ram Murray won the draw back to the point, and I think Mike Greer tipped it in.
Yep.
And it was crazy. I mean, that, and I just felt that we were going to score at that time with the guys that were out there. It wasn't Dougie and Billy, who we had relied on a lot in that series. But the whole thing about that whole year was that the people that chipped in, game in and game out, were nine times out of ten the Buckburgers and the Marchants and the Greers and the supposedly less counted on guys that played a huge factor in those 3 years, actually.
Yeah, I think a lot of people forget Kelly Buckburger in 97. He was tied for the team lead with Ryan Smith in goals with five in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Bucky had a great, I mean, just a fantastic season that year. And you know what? Deservedly so. I don't know if I've ever seen a player that worked harder than Kelly anywhere. And the other guy you mentioned, Smitty, the biggest mistake in my whole career coaching was sitting him out one game. And it's kind of funny because I was playing golfing with him the other day, and he said, you know what? He said, that was the biggest lesson of my life. So I guess everybody's thought processes change. I mean, I remember I dressed a Russian kid instead of him, Salabanov, and in the game, he was horrible, and I felt like an absolute tool afterwards.
Rondo, Joy, what was your reasoning? I don't even remember when you benched him. Why'd you bench him?
He had three pretty tough games in a row in the playoffs, and actually, in Salabanov's defense, he had played pretty well. And I forget who we inserted somebody into the lineup. Somebody came back off injury. I can't really remember who it was now. But, yeah, and I had to take somebody out. And the way the previous three games had gone, Smitty had struggled a bit. So I guess that was the reasoning behind it. And like I said, there's maybe the biggest mistake in my career as far as my feelings towards team, because I like Smitty as a son. He was a great kid. And he took the benching hard, and you know what? The next night he came back and scored two goals and told me to stick it.
And really, Ron, as a coach, those are the hard decisions, because you never make it personal, but you really hope that, you know, if the guy gets a burr up as you know what and dislikes the coach and takes it out on the other team, you kind of want that.
Well, I mean, exactly. I mean, I wasn't doing it to send any messages per se, because Smitty was a kid. And, hey, that's part of hockey, and you live with what you feel, and that's basically the way I coached. You got a feeling for something, you do it. Well, sometimes there's regrets, and sometimes there isn't. So the final result is if it works out and helps the player and he scores me two goals the next night by telling me you shouldn't have sat me out, I'm okay with that.
Ron Lowe joined us. Now, Ron, now we won't get into all of the details. It's kind of a folklore story. But as a coach, you know, the Kovalenko, Boris Mironov, and we had Boris Mironov on the show, and he kind of joked about how, you know, maybe it was out on a search party one night. As a coach, when you find out about that, how do you react?
Well, different ways at different times, I guess. I mean, the time we couldn't find Boris and Kobe for a good 48 hours in New York City, the end result was a bag skate that damn near killed them, and it lasted for about 3 days. So that was my feeling that there was no other way to do it, and I didn't play them for three days. We played the Islanders right after that. And they didn't dress for the game. And like I said, I bag skated them for 3 days. And you know what? It was like a stupid kind of a thing to do. But that's what I felt was retribution for leaving your team for 2 days. And basically kind of given the thought process that you really didn't care, which both of them did. However, every once in a while, there was other things that were more important.
you know, and as a coach, really, that's your only option. It's kind of like you're a parent at times, and you got to discipline your kid. And even if it's hard and you know they're good guys, you still got to send that message. But are you actually surprised more guys didn't go MIA in New York sometimes?
Well, no. I mean, that is one thing. The Oiler organization has always had a bit of a code. And you pick your spots. And when you're on the road, you have all kinds of times to go out and have a good time. The night before the game, and that's not the time. And no matter what happened, that was instilled by Lee Foglin at the beginning, Kevin Lowe, Gratz. It was by everybody, and it was by committee that you looked after. But those two were roommates, and they got lost. We couldn't find them. So, but basically, you know, the teams that I've had, they're like be sitting there laughing if they're listening to any of this, because I don't think they were out on the road before games, and that's to me a really good thing.
Ron Lowe joins us. We're going to talk hockey for Homus in a sec, Ron. But this is really these are the type of stories for people out there. If they're not taking part of it, they still have some late registrations. You can sign up and help, and more importantly, make a donation. You guys are getting closer, I've noticed, to your goal of raising $250,000, which is outstanding. You got a few days left to raise that, and we'll get to that in a second. But was the only positive in that story, Ron, that at least they went out as teammates? So, you know, they were looking out for one another.
Yeah. They did it there, and they did it one night in L.A., but at least in the L.A., we were looking for them the next day. They were smart enough to do it after the game. They were still MIA, they did it usually as teammates.
Now, Ron, when you played, what did you ever have a fun night on the town when you maybe were out of the, like, back when you played in the 70s and into the early 80s, was it something that still happened every now and then?
Well, we were in Vancouver when I was with New Jersey, and Tommy McVie was our coach, and we actually won in Vancouver, and with the Jersey Devils, we didn't win much on the road, and we won in Vancouver, and Tommy comes into the dressing room after the game and says, well, listen, boys, you've won a game on the road. Don't think you're great. We have a 5:30 bus tomorrow, and we have a 6:30 practice in the morning. Now I'm going, okay. So myself and Ace Bailey and Jerry Mee and a couple other guys are out and having a couple of pops, and I got the itinerary and got the bus company's name, called them and canceled the bus for the next morning. So there was no bus showed up, and Ace and myself never showed up down in the bottom of the hotel because we knew there was no bus coming. Tommy McVie just found out about that about 3 years ago in the press box in Vancouver when I was sitting with him. He always blamed Stan Gilbertson, but he was the wrong guy.
Oh, man, your teammates must have loved you on that one.
Well, it was kind of by, like, I was the one that phoned, but we had a pretty large vote.
Yeah.
And I think there was only one guy that abstained. I think he was leaning the same way we were.
Ron Lowe joins us. Ronnie, talk about some of the guys you've got coming in this year for the lineup for people to play with.
Well, you know, we've got some new guys this year, and we're really grateful to have them. Wade Redden's coming in. Brad Isbister's coming in. Dean McCammon's coming in. These are new guys for us. And Scott Thornton's coming in, which is great.
A beauty.
We just got Jeff Smith signed up here 3 days ago. He was working and didn't know if he could get off, and he's got himself arranged. So we have our 24-man roster, so that is a really good thing. And my thanks to all the local guys, Chris Joseph and Brian Benning and all the boys that are in town. They step up to the plate every time I ask, and that's we're very fortunate to have the alumni we have here in Edmonton that support a lot of the functions in town.
You got the legend Dave Lumley playing?
Oh, yeah. in his own mind or what?
Well, hey, when you
won't... No, yeah, yeah. He's still the guy who's got the longest streak. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, 12. No problem.
Doesn't he have a jersey that just says on the back 12 in a row? I thought that's what it was.
Actually, he's Lumber stepped up to the plate for us in this thing every year. For everything around town, he's very good at it.
No, Lumley's a beauty. He was joking to me earlier. We were talking about white skates and, you know, how guys wear the white skates. And, you know, he was joking that he still wears the same skates that he played with.
he skates the same way, too.
Ron, for people who want to donate, what's the best way they can get involved and help out?
Well, right now, the top eight fundraisers get to go to a hockey game and sit in the box donated by Lyle Best, which was unbelievable. And if you know somebody that's playing in it, go to the Hockey Helps the Homeless Edmonton event, and you see the names of all the players on the teams, and sponsor them. And if you don't know anybody, throw in a donation. Anything helps. This is a program that is pretty functional, very easy to do, and we can use all the support we can get from everybody out there right now.
And this is something that's across the country now, in Edmonton and in Calgary and Toronto and Vancouver, Montreal. I think you're in London and Kitchener-Waterloo. This and Markham, Barrie even. This is really growing for you guys.
Yeah, it has, and I think there's really good reasoning behind it. I mean, if you look around, there's way too much homelessness, and it's not just the person laying on the street that you see. It could be a family that just lost a job and can't afford rent. Murray down at Jasper Place Health and Wellness Center has done an unbelievable job. In the past 7 years, he's looked after 600 people, which is amazing. And if you look at all the stats from everything added up, if you can take a person off the street, you're likely saving the government and yourself in taxes about $180,000 to $250,000 in a lifetime. So is it worth it? Damn right. Just for the person that you're taking off the street, and monetarily for everybody involved.
That's awesome, Ron. Great you're part of it. Darren had texted in that when you played for the Oilers, his mom took him to practice, and when you left the ice, you had him in his goal stick. 39 years later, it's still in perfect condition. So there you go.
Well, I didn't use my stick much. It's a good thing he got some use out of it.
Well, Ron, look forward to a great weekend, and hopefully you guys, I know your numbers are climbing all the time and you reach their goal. People go for Hockey Helps Homeless, and then, of course, click on the Edmonton event and find a team, donate there. It's awesome. The TSN 1260 boys will be out there. They'll be having a lot of fun.
Yeah, it should be. It's going to be a great Friday. I mean, the people that are in town, all the alumni, are going to make it great, and for all the people that are being sponsored, kudos to you, and let's make it the best one yet.
Yeah, that's awesome, Ron. We appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, Jason. Thanks a lot.